What are the words that haven't met? What does it look like when we think about not leaving a legacy on this earth? What is more? These are some of the questions that Bistra, our Macedonian guest living in Vienna, brings answers to during this latest episode of She Rocks Global. Join us in conversation with this human who adores connecting with other humans. May this episode rock your world. Welcome to another episode of She Rocks Global, where we'll be showcasing yet another perfectly imperfect woman from somewhere fascinating in the world. Hello, Maka. I'm saying hello to you from Cape Town, South Africa today. How are you and where are you today?
Hello, Navisa. From Maldonado in Uruguay, a very sunny day today.
I love it when you and I have sunny days and then we get to show off to our guest. So I'd love to welcome our guest. And please, can you introduce yourself and tell us where you are? Also, do you have sunshine?
Hello from my side, checking in from Vienna. A pretty gloomy day today. We are full on with winter. Yesterday was snowy, the day before a little bit sunshine. So you can't really tell whether the climate crisis is a urgent crisis, emergency crisis, or what happens with the seasons. But I'm very happy to be connecting with you today. My name is Bistra. I originally come from Macedonia, but have been based in Vienna for the past, I would say, from 2014. So how much has it been? Let's not count years. Huh? That's not the point. Yeah. Let's not go into statistics.
Thank you so much, Bistra, for joining us from a partly sunny, partly gloomy, partly snowy Vienna. Perhaps for many, many listeners, this might be the first time that they get to interact with somebody from a place called Macedonia. So before you even tell us about what happens in Vienna, perhaps you can give us a sense of what is Macedonia about, where is it, and what brought you to Vienna?
Such a beautiful question to kick off the conversation. So I'm coming from a very small town and a small country. Macedonia is based in the Western Balkans, kind of central to the Western Balkans, bordering Serbia or Greece. I assume for most of the listeners, maybe those will be a more recognizable names of countries. And I come from the western side of the country, a town called Struga, where actually, very interestingly, a lot of poetry festivals have happened in the past years. So I grew up with a writer, father, poet father myself, and he was one of the initiators of this poetry movement in Struga, where we would welcome names like Ted Hughes or W.H. Auden or many like Allen Ginsberg. So really famous poets would come to this very small piece of geography point, Struga, and recite their poetry about a different world or how we can change things. And that happened already in previously known Yugoslavia and continues to happen in the independent Macedonia itself. So if I have one association that is very strong when we talk about Macedonia, is for me it's poetry, art, creativity. And then on the other side, a very, very strong and warm feeling of community. I've been raised with people from different diverse ethnicities, religions, and that has been looked at, unfortunately, in the past years, maybe as a more of a challenge. But when I was growing up as a child, it was more of an advantage. It was something you would be proud of. So coming from that kind of diverse, ethnically diverse country, I've always enjoyed the beauty of humans connecting with humans. And at the same time, respecting the beauty of where we landed, where we are born, and really encompassing the beauty of that nature that that we are kind of guests to, if I can call it like that. But since very young age, I was also very aware that small countries might suffer from slightly narrow-mindedness and lack of opportunities. So I was very young when I first, I think I was 13 maybe, when I first said out loud to my parents that I will not live here forever. It was a very clear for me message somehow, or not even a conscious decision, more of a kind of a drive that there is something more out there. And that something more is inviting me in some way to contribute, to get to know it. That journey kind of, led me to developing few things in Macedonia. So I studied, I finished my university studies in Macedonia, bachelor studies. in the capital city, started off with some activism, if I can call it, or support for young people. So started with a movement where we would help young people from Macedonia to apply for scholarships abroad so they could get exposed to foreign academia, foreign knowledge, thinking that would maybe be a key to success or key to better imagination or chance in life. And growing up in that kind of developing, I would say, environment also made me appreciate many things that maybe in the super comfortable high income countries, I wouldn't have been exposed to. But it also made me very much eager to go to those high income countries because there was a level of fascination. Where I come from in Macedonia, people would be fascinated with high income, more than necessary, if I can be honest. But it is something that is a driver of success. Yeah, that's how we measure the success of a country, GDP, economically, profit. So only in, I think when I was 26, I managed to get a scholarship myself and go abroad. And the first country where I lived was Slovenia, mm-hmm. where I got a master studies in international business. But studying only was just simply too boring, if I can be honest. So I found a job quite fast as well and joined the youth movement again, but now with a lens of looking into social entrepreneurship. This was the first time, so at the age of 26, that I discovered kind of a model where maybe art, culture, activism can be combined with a capitalistic mindset and profit-oriented mindset. And this was something that got me curious and still keeps me curious, I would say. So it's been years now. I am based in Vienna because through my career, I had the chance to work in Uganda, Rwanda, a little bit in Singapore as well, South Africa as well. But I always kept my home to be the continent of Europe. I travel a lot back to Macedonia as well, but I was looking for that one spot where there is enough diversity and not enough as well, maybe drive to innovate and not out of necessity, but out of opportunity. And I found that in Vienna. So I love this place where I am. It has a quite high quality of life, also a lot of cultural initiatives, and it's becoming, and I am witnessing that becoming of a more diverse city where I see a lot of not only immigrants, but really communities, second generation migrants that are building up beautiful initiatives, whether it's related to BIPOC community or ex-Yugoslavian community or really any kind of color and religion and sexual orientation, and so diverse in many, many ways. And that, I have to say, is one of the main reasons why I love it here.
Oh, fantastic. And thank you for that very rich introduction. And there's a word, I know Maka has a question, and I'm going to ask one question and then hand over to you, Maka. There's a word that keeps coming up, and the word is more. And so if you could think about what it was like when you understood that you were looking for more, .. Now that you are in a place that has more, are you able to define what you think more is?
Maybe I tell you a story from the first time I went to Uganda. I went as a trainer for social entrepreneurship, working with young people. And in one of my workshops, I had to deliver a workshop without laptop or projector because we didn't have access to electricity on that particular day. It put me totally out of my comfort zone, right? So first of all, I had to remember everything I had on my laptop because I had no battery on it to open the presentation. And then I had to also kind of figure out what makes sense to share as examples if all my examples come from highly developed or high income countries. How does that relate to someone living in Uganda in a small village and trying to create a social business for themselves and their community? And I started the presentation by asking, what do you think is the richest country or continent in the world? And people said, and this is something really eye-opening, people said, whenever we Google that, the answer is Africa. Because Google at that time recognized richest by richest in nature resources. Mm-hmm. And that paradigm of thinking has been very much with me, even as a little child, I would say, or a young developing professional, thinking, what is actually rich and what is actually more? I believe that we are highly influenced by the messages and narratives that we are surrounded with. And some of that is partly home upbringing, friends and colleagues, people that you meet on an everyday basis. There is even a theory that says you as a person are the combination of the five people you meet most. And I believe this because you are representing and building images in your head based on the conversations with the people you meet the most. But then on top of that, you have the narrative of the media, mass media or internet or anything else that is coming up with lots of other messages. And those things influence our inner understanding of more, rich, success, all these words that we just use quite often, and they are not necessarily very much authentically ours, but more pre-given or kind of building from the conversations. So if you asked Bistra when she was 14, what was more? More was freedom. I wanted no gossip time. I wanted an environment where I could say, I want to be a pilot, and people would say, great, you can be one. That's amazing, Bistra. That's amazing dream that you have. Go for it. Yeah. That kind of freedom I didn't have in that sense. But I also wanted it to have more of, maybe if I can call stability in a financial term, but also stability in safety terms. We went out from Yugoslavia in a very turbulent time. It was not very clear in my teenage years whether a war will happen or not in my country. And that, if I can call it psychological safety, was a predominant element of what I called freedom. So I wanted to be free. I think that would be the more. It was more free, yeah? However, now if I look back, I have to say that it was a little bit also of an innocent misconception, because maybe another story, and I can tell a lot of stories. Sorry if I make it too long, but... at the age of 9 or 10, I had a really big dream that I wanted to visit Paris. It was the city of light. It was one of the most, I don't know why, but I had such a detailed image of falling asleep on the Eiffel Tower every night, dreaming of this beautiful city of light under under my eyes. I managed to get to a competition that allowed, that awarded people in Macedonia to travel to Paris. By collecting few mosaic pieces, you build a picture, send it to a TV station, they do a lucky draw, and 20 people out of thousands get the ticket to go to Paris. And believe it or not, I won this. I was one of these 20 kids that actually won this trip. And I knew that this whole competition was created for me. This is what I thought. Because I had to go to Paris, yeah? And my mom didn't believe me. My dad didn't believe me. They wanted to keep my hopes down. But the truth was, I did win it. And I did go to Paris. And what I learned in Paris was, my dreams can come true. There is an unbelievable power to an innocent wish. But not every freedom you get and every dream that comes true gives you everything you have imagined and everything you've dreamed. Because what happened when I went on the Eiffel Tower, for the first time in real, I cried for my mom and my dad. Mm. I didn't want to be alone there. I wanted to be with the safety I knew from home. And this was a very interesting aspect that I think on a long run gave me a lot of layers of understanding, wow, what a privilege, a dream come true. You can actually experience that. But then also, wait a minute, is everything we think and wish for worth it? That it comes true? Is that it? So, yeah, more is also less in many ways. But I do believe that in this world, we should be able and given the chance to make at least a wish or a dream come true. Everyone, I mean, because the privilege and experience of that gives you a level of self-confidence that you carry in times like this now, where we need to wake up with a, the wish, the dream that we can radically transform the world we live in, because that's what's needed. And my childhood dream of Paris is now something different. But because that dream came true, I feel I have that freedom and self-confidence to go on, to fight, to build avenues that can make that dream come true.
She Rocks Global started as a simple thought. Wouldn't it be cool to celebrate perfectly imperfect women around the world? And it grew into the three of us chatting to you every 2 weeks. If you've got an idea you want to take to the world, our production partners, 400 Seats, can help make it happen. From video production to podcast, from concept through to the final editing, they can help bring your vision to life. Take a seat with them. Visit 400seats.com to find out more.
I love the way you tap into concepts like diversity and how where you were born. And while you were talking, that was something that really impressed me very positively of the Western Europe when I've been there, like how you manage and you are used to deal with diversity in a very healthy and I love it. And I think something we have to learn from the rest of the world. You talk about privilege, about freedom, about what is more, but that more is less. I love that concept. How do you understand success through all these topics you talked? Because you talk about how countries and nations measure success. What is success for Bistra?
To be honest, I was really shaken last year. I think I had the pleasure to talk to Noa Bissa already about it a little bit. My definition of success evolves, and I can't say that I have one fixed one, but last year was a tremendously powerful year. Apart from the fact that I lost my father and lost a pillar of some kind of support as I knew it, I also lost a little bit of, not lost, but gained maybe a different level of looking at the world while recognizing my white privilege. Yeah. Although coming from Macedonia, a country that is not as developed as the other EU countries, there is layers of white privilege that I carry, and that whiteness has to be recognized and digged into. And it's not a very, if I may say, comfortable journey, not at all, actually. So the definition of success has been highly influenced by these two elements. On top of that, I have been fascinated with the existence of the nature world. I'm a fan of whales, and I read a lot about the oceans and whales it's themselves. And I will start maybe with success from planet point of view first. We as humans are not the most intelligent creatures on the planet. So success for me is to have a happy life, knowing this and accepting it, and asking for permission from all other species and ecosystems that exist to recognize our place, build aligned and synced environments together with us, and hopefully that we can live a life without harming any other human system, ecosystem, or species in one lifetime. This would be something I would call a basic level of success. Then when we go a little bit into the society level, I definitely believe, and we can't avoid that, that money and profit equals freedom, because it gives you the possibility and strength to choose. Whether that is right or wrong, I have opinions, but that doesn't really influence the fact that the system as such is designed like that. I believe that success would be to flip this system a little bit, or create small examples where actually profit is not the driving force behind, but it's a support tool to something bigger, whether a mission, whether a value, whether a equitable world, whether unity between different communities, whatever we consider to be positive social or environmental impact. And lastly, I think on a very individual level, success for me as a, again, white privileged, but also very dominant woman. You know, I can enter a room and I feel fully comfortable to take the attention and the space that I need, regardless of who is in the room, whether male, female, or different colors or religions. as much as powerful that is, and I do raise my hand for that, I believe success is actually in the opposite, in the vulnerability. It took me a very long time to be comfortable with the failure elements of my personality, or to understand that failure is nothing negative, nothing to be ashamed of. And that level of depth only comes when you open up in your vulnerability and look at the world in that way. So for me, success is when a client or partner contacts us and says, can we have a meeting about this big project? And I'm fully ill, you know, blocked. Even at the moment, you might hear a little bit, I'm a little bit snotty and not feeling well. And that's good, because then I will have a much more vulnerable conversation rather than in my super powerful bistro mode, where actually I come up with great ideas. Don't get me wrong. I love those ideas. But actually, they are not maybe in service of what the world needs at the moment. And I would push them through because they are great ideas. The world needs them. And this is a really, really, you know, self-reflection doesn't apply to everyone. But I come from that kind of maybe upbringing as well. And I believe that success many, many years in my head has been defined as a strong, powerful. And I believe those are needed. But vulnerability is the utmost power for a person like me that has practiced hiding it rather than promoting it.
And Bistro, I think part of that, and maybe the silent part around me putting words in your mouth in terms of success up until now, you know, has been about being strong and right. And perhaps on some level, success has also been about being white. And so I'm curious to find out, you know, you alluded to it, and I'm hope you're comfortable to maybe elaborate a little bit more around what was this eruption or collision that you had in your psyche around understanding whiteness, privilege, whilst having had a very clear story that you were from Macedonia where you needed to go somewhere else for more. What was that moment and what does it mean for you today?
It touches on so many levels. I am not sure I can even articulate it properly. Mm-hmm. I have to be honest, but I will do my best. I think the first biggest shock was basically us as a company, Heartbeats Innovation and Communication. We've always been mission-driven, but being mission-driven sometimes offers a lot of blind spots, simply because the bare fact that you're mission-driven allows you to maybe filter through who you work with, how you work, but you also many times build up some kind of a privilege around it. So almost like if you're in the field of social entrepreneurship or impact or mission driven, you already do so well. So why question what you do? Yeah. So we really were careful not to fall into that space. So in 2020, when the pandemic started, we started questioning a lot of our frameworks that we use. In our work, we use a lot of frameworks related to regeneration, social change, design thinking for social change, etc. And when we looked into the root of where these frameworks come from, we were shocked how global north they were. Not to say that nothing good can come out of the global north, but we do believe that there is a lot of good things coming out of the global south that never made it to be as popular or maybe addressed or connected to us and our work. So let's look at it a little bit differently and try to figure out which communities can offer us an eye-opening experience into sustainability, maybe from a decolonial point of view. My co-founder, Christina, went through a journey of a kind of an academy, an online course, exactly on decolonizing sustainability. And after every week, our whole team would get inputs from her, sometimes even exercises, but also thoughts. Two things really hurt me, I would say, to a level that I needed weeks to digest. First was that my white privileges are not only privileges that I don't see, but there are privileges that at the same time harm others as we speak. This is something very big to swallow. And they come also from, this comes from the fact that the system is designed that way. It's not like I can change that, but I can be honest and loud about it. So the fact that I am in Vienna, white woman, with all the layers of knowledge and travels I've had, gives me privileges that harm others in the very moment as we speak. And this will continue unless we raise awareness and try to minimize the impact we have. And that's the second part where I was really broken down, which is all my life I've believed it's important to discover your passion and your dream and to fight for it, you know, to really make it happen. But actually learning from indigenous communities, the point was to not leave a legacy, to leave the planet as less impacted so that other generations after you can come also and enjoy the beautiful variety of nature, planet, and people. So I realized, oh my God, all my life I'm trying to basically prove my own agenda without really looking at the living system as such. And what is my role? Where do I serve? Apart from my passion and what I imagined, wait a minute, like, let's look at the bigger picture here. What are we going to do in one human life? What are we going to, you know, change? And all this knowledge led me and our company as well to a point where we say, oh my God, there is so much fakeness in the impact world and social entrepreneurship as such. And we really need to look at this field with a new lens. And if our partners and clients want to work with us because they feel good working with us, that's number one wrong. We have to actually start to sell uncomfortable experiences, as uncomfortable as the ones that I've or my team has been through. And this is a challenge, I have to be honest. We are now in the beginning of a year, and we've been very, you know, very strict about where do we want to go. We are very clear, clearer than ever. New doors open, but as well, you see how people are not always interested in making that in-depth transformations that are needed to actually change how we look at international aid, international businesses, the power dynamic, etc. So for me, I think just shutting up is a very big change. And I'm now put in a position where I talk to you and I'm expected to talk to you. But I told you in the very beginning, and I want to reassure and repeat that, what I've learned from Nwabisa or just talking to you right now, that's what matters more than what I am saying. I'm hoping I can be just someone that channels messages, maybe more towards my white folk, towards my white people, and understand that the beauty and the transformation we're talking about is impossible unless we look at the decolonizing element and the history of this world.
Thanks, Bistra. For me, all these conversations, it's been mind-blowing, especially in the way you talk about the things we need to, like, I have a diversity consultancy agency, and we talk about a lot about going through the uncomfortable, like there are no recipes, but still that makes us like make that the things you are sharing, like to ourselves, like what is the uncomfortable I need to go through to be a channel or to be in this conversation in a better way. Really, you're making me, my mind is blowing right now. Thank you for that, because that I'm grateful for that. What makes you uncomfortable? What frightens you?
That's a very good question, and not something I think about very often. So let me really, maybe what frightens me the most is that in my lifetime we will not find the language that unites. So I'm a poet as well as my hobby, I would say. And I spend a lot of time thinking about words and, you know, what are those words that haven't met and maybe hold a meaning that we've been blinded to? And is really English the language in which we will do that, or is it other languages? So language as a way to communicate beyond wires and technology and everything else we have as an infrastructure. What is the language? What are we communicating about? And I believe that holding space for ourselves, so me for myself, then me for my family, my friends, the people I meet, then me in my work, all of those levels require different languages somehow, or sometimes, very often, I can't articulate what I mean. But I'm okay with that. I just would like, maybe by the end of my lifetime, to hear that language of holiness, of that makes sense somehow. And I didn't mean holiness in a religious or spiritual way, but like a whole, not parts, that we are not divided, but that we are one. I believe this kind of language has been a little bit lost and strategically pushed that we divide more and more. So yeah, and maybe another thing that I feel a little bit scared of is that we will not have the imagination as human species to come up with the solutions that are needed. So I hope we can communicate with whales or other species, but this is something, I mean, it sounds a little bit crazy, but I think there is so much we need to learn from other ecosystems, not only the social system, but you know, to find that sustainable, just space that humans need to function without harming others. I think that would be something, yeah, beautiful. But even if it's not met in my lifetime, that's okay. I think we can all contribute bits and pieces.
Well, thank you. Your contribution has been absolutely wonderful. I am so enamored with the idea of what words have yet to meet. So that we can find language. And so I'm hoping you'll find and make some words meet as we ask you our last question of this conversation, which is, Bistra, what makes you rock?
Well, probably the one thing that comes to my mind when I think of rocking is, I would say writing poetry while I see the plants in the garden slowly growing into something that have been planted by me or others, but it's kind of in a community garden. And the bare fact that things will happen even if I don't move and nature will just continue, this gives me a very special, unique feeling of being small and being able to rock. So in a gentle way, we can shake the world. And I think that's something that's something that makes me rock when I think of that sentence. But I have one more quote I want to mention. For anyone who is kind of like both of you, looking for that, narrative and language and what's next, I love a quote by Indian writer and human rights activist Arundhati Roy. She says, "Another world is not only possible, she's on her way. On a very quiet day, I can hear her breathing." Beautiful.
And she's an incredible writer. She's the author of A God of Small Things. And so I also highly encourage anyone who's listening to go look for that. And there's so much more. Maybe we can start a book club, Bistra, and try and get the world to read a lot more about and, you know, find the words that have been used in the Global South, because we have ideas, we have imagination. And so thank you for reminding us of that during this conversation. Maka, you're a darling. Thank you for also being a part of this conversation.
Thank you. I'm so grateful for this conversation. Bistra, you've blown my mind. Thank you very much for your time and this conversation.
Thank you as well from my side, Mabisa Makarena. I really felt very nicely hosted, and I hope that what I said resonates with you. I believe that spaces like this, the spaces you design, are the spaces of the future and the only islands of sanity that we will have in times to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and until next time, to everyone listening, keep rocking.
She Rocks Global is a podcast collaboration produced by Macarena Bota, Noa Bisa Mayema, and Soya Kukic. This season of She Rocks Global was recorded remotely and was mixed by our partners at 400seats.com. Theme music for this podcast is composed and arranged through a collaboration between South African musician Nosihe and Hannah Sikasa from Germany. Mixing engineer is T. Luminous. She Rocks Global is a podcast that showcases the stories of perfectly imperfect women from around the world. You can connect us through our Instagram handle at SheRocksGlobal, hashtag SheRocks. Please do subscribe to our podcast, wherever you find your podcast. Rate and review us too. This makes it easier for more people to find us. Thank you. Until next time, keep rocking.